Good morning. Welcome to the Message of Truth. My name is Keith Greer. I'm the local preacher at the Harrisburg Church of Christ. We want to take this opportunity to thank you for listening to our broadcast this morning. We hope you tune in each Sunday morning at this time as we endeavor to give you a message of truth. We also have a TV program that airs right after this broadcast on public access channel number 6 on your television entitled Searching the Scriptures. Please give a look. We also have a very extensive website, churchofchrist@harrisburg.com. You'll find all these MP3 files of our radio program. You'll find our TV videos out there and a host of other Bible-related material that will help you and aid you in your study of God's Word. Please give a look. We also want to invite you to our periods of Bible study and worship at the Harrisburg Church of Christ. We encourage you and invite you to any or all these services. You will always be warmly received. Our only desire is to show you need for God in your life and to have a relationship with His Son, Jesus Christ. We hope you'll take advantage and come and be with us on this Lord's Day. We would love to see you. For the past few months, we have been examining the teachings of 1 Peter and the books written by the Apostle Peter. We are now in chapter number 2, and we are examining the submission of men in verse 13 through 20. Now, we are talking about the responsibility that God gives us as His people to submit for under civil government as long as that government does not violate God's will. And we ended up last Lord's Day talking about when we act in a way of rebellion or as an insurrectionist, then we give the Lord's church bad publicity and we do not represent what it means to be a Christian. The Christian's redemption is for the purpose of good, not for evil. That's why we were redeemed by God, as we read in chapter 2, verse 16. Redemption here is understood as a change of masters rather than as conferring to an absolute liberty. Liberty, the gospel does not free us from the obligation to live in harmony with the law. Just because we live under the law of Christ, just because our citizenship is in heaven, does not mean that we can just disobey civil law and civil government. We can't use our Christianity in order to give us a reason to oppose and to object and to disobey civil government. A cloak, a covering, a means of hiding, to cover, a pretense, a cloak for wickedness. We're not to use our relationship with Christ as a means of escaping our duty as a citizen. Do not commit evil under the pretext of freedom. Some do exactly this. Yet we are free from sin, but we are bound to God since we were bought with the price, according to 1 Corinthians 6, verse 20. Part of our duty to God includes our duty to civil government. Thus, God's will is that men submit themselves to the world, national, state, and local rulers, insomuch as these rulers and servants are servants of God, to regulate evil in those realms, whether it be national, state, or local governments. And again, we are to do that in order to demonstrate what Christianity is and the good that Christianity can do and the good that it will do in the lives of each person that would choose to live that way. Let me give you an example. I'm against abortion. I believe it's murder. I believe the Bible teaches it's murder. I oppose abortion. And I know many things that my government does in supporting that particular action. I oppose and I try to oppose that in my vote and in people that I vote for nationally, locally, or stately. But again, because I oppose abortion, I'm not going to kill an abortion doctor. I'm not going to bomb an abortion clinic. That's against civil law. That's against the civil government. I can't do that and carry out my responsibility as being true to God. And so again, I can oppose the wrong. I can oppose the evil of abortion. I can oppose and teach against it and speak out against it, but I can't violate civil government in my opposition to it. If I do, then I violate my obligation to God, and I put Christianity in a very bad light. And so listen to the summary of what God says in verse number 17. It says, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Now, that's how we carry out God's will. You see, honor, that means to have honor, revere, veneration to other men. We are to have a healthy respect for others even placing them in respect above ourselves, according to Romans 12 and verse 3. We should view each person as possessing an eternal soul and treat them with such understanding as we are told in Matthew 16:26. We are not to despise unbeliever. We do not hate one's persecutors. We don't hold not in contempt those of lower status. We, different race, color, are not excused or regard to us to treat them as second-class citizens. We are to treat all men equally. All human beings, Gentiles, Jew, black, white, male, female, doesn't make any difference to God. It cannot make any difference to us. We are to love. We are to keep loving. Is the force of the verb here, active goodwill to the recipients so far as their best interest is served. The brotherhood, the community that possesses in this relation, is the brotherhood. We have a particular duty to the brotherhood. We are to have unfeigned love, according to 1 Peter 1, verse 22. And there are many passages. We are to do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith, Galatians 6, 10. We are to prefer one another, Romans 12, 10. We are to love the brotherhood, according to 1 Peter 5, 14. We are to have a special relationship one to another. We have a special duty as God's people one to another. Read the book of 1 John, especially chapter 2, verse 10, chapter 3, verse 10, chapter 4, verse 11, and verse 21. We have a very close relationship with our brethren, and we have a duty to keep that relationship close and to love them and to help them and to support them. But we are to fear. We are to keep fearing. That's in a present imperative. We are to keep fearing. It's not a one-time thing. We are to do so to show respect and reverential obedience to God and to men. We are to honor the King. We should be impressed by the nature of the teaching in these verses. Peter exhibits a firm insistence here on the positive outgoing duty of Christians and members in society of involving, honoring, and respecting everybody. He exhorts Christians to live in the world as part of the world, not simply as passing strangers. Now again, we have to keep all this in perspective. We must understand that we live in the world, but we're not of the world. In 1 John chapter 2, in verse 15 through 17, and we mentioned this in our earlier discussions of being pilgrims and sojourners, we are not to love the world, neither the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life is of the world. And the world is passing away in the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. Now it is true that we are not to love the world, we're not to live like the world, but we must keep that in its proper context. In these first few verses, in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13 through verse 17, we are commanded by God that we are to submit ourselves to the governing authorities. And as we read in the last couple of weeks, in Romans 13, verse 1 through 7, that if we resist civil government, then we resist God, because God's the one that ordained civil government. But please understand, God designed civil government for our good. He defined authority in the secular realm for our good. That does not mean that they always act in accordance with his will or is according to his instruction. Or does it mean that he agrees with every decision that they might make? And he opposes things that are contrary to his will, and we can oppose things that are contrary to his will. But that does not authorize us to be an insurrectionist or in rebellion to civil government. I want to give you an excellent illustration. When the Lord came on the scene, the Roman government was very oppressive. They were not only oppressive to a lot of different nationalities and people, they were especially oppressive to God's people. They persecuted God's people, even putting them to death later on, and their persecution of Christians would become very exact and would become very graphic. But nowhere in the scripture did it teach us to rebel against that authority. We would submit and we were to demonstrate our love for them by our submission to those things, as long as it did not coexist in disobeying a command of God. I will obey civil government as long as it doesn't cause me to disobey God. And by obeying civil government, I obey God. And by obeying civil government, submitting myself to civil government, either in a national, state, or local level, I have not left off my citizenship in heaven. I haven't violated any teaching of Christ. In reality, I've exemplified it. I put it on a higher plane. As I've told you in the last couple of weeks, who ought to be the best examples of law-abiding citizens? Who should be the best examples of men who love all men and strive to do good to all men? It should be God's people. It should be us as Christians. We ought to be exhibiting to others what it means to be a Christian, and we exhibit that by being obedient to civil government as long as it does not violate the law of God. And again, I can oppose many things that the civil government may do that it is in opposition to God's will and God's instruction, and I can speak out against it. I can cast my vote against men who propagate things and who promote things that are contrary to spiritual teaching and instruction that I find in the Bible. But that's not the same as me, as we gave an example of bombing an abortion clinic or killing an abortion doctor, or by failing to pay taxes because I don't like what that tax money is used for. I can speak out against that. I can try to elect and vote for people who will be more in line with what I would want our tax dollars to be paid for. But because I don't agree with every thing that they use the tax money for, does not give me the duty as a Christian to fail to pay taxes and to get myself at odds with the civil government because I want to fight the IRS. We must obey civil government as long as it does not violate God's will. Again, speed limit sign. I must obey, though. That's civil government. I must pay my taxes. That's civil government. I must be a law-abiding citizen. I must obey the laws of the land. That's what Romans 13, 1 through 7 says. And by doing that, I put the best spin on Christianity. I demonstrate that Christianity is not a threat to society. It's not a threat to government. It's not a threat to authority. But it's going to demonstrate that being a Christian can even make it better, can make it more effective, because that God's the one who designed it. God's the one who ordained it. And so in closing this morning, in the first part of this text that we've been examining, we've been looking at our duty as law-abiding citizens. We are to be obedient to civil government. We are to be obeying the laws of the land. We ought to pay taxes. We ought to not cheat. We ought to not reject civil authority over us, only in the instance that it violates God's will, and then we must be faithful to God rather than men, as we read in Acts 5, verse 29. And I close with this thought this morning. The best example of what it means to be a law-abiding citizen, faithful to civil government and faithful to the spiritual government of the Lord, is to be a law-abiding citizen. When we do that, we uphold the instruction given to us by our Master. Have a good day.